Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you for once again embracing your bounce. It's go time. It's that time of the year. It's championship season. Let's get this going, Nikaias.
It's about that time. How's the weekend, good sir?
It was good. How was yours?
Pretty solid. Pretty solid. I have to watch WrestleMania because the clips that I've seen have drawn me in. I got to catch up on that at some point.
Oh, just watch Saturday.
Just watch Saturday. Okay.
Definitely watch Saturday. Full of bangers.
Yeah, I have to check that out. Also, I have to check out Winning Time. Haven't seen that yet. Was on a flight last night, so got to catch up on that as well. Have you seen any of those episodes yet?
No, I have not tuned into it, mainly based on Jerry West's reaction.
I see. You are passing on the show in respect, out of respect for Jerry West. I feel no logo slander on the podcast. Okay. Let's kick things off with some college before we get into the big boom. South Carolina, the Lady Gamecocks are champions. A 64-49 victory over the UConn Huskies. And honestly, the game really wasn't that close. It didn't feel like.
Nah, that opening stretch from South Carolina was something else. They set the tone immediately.
I just don't know. I mean, the season's over with now, but like, I don't know what you do with that defense. Aaliyah Boston anchoring things and being a scheme versatile as she is. Bria Beal is one of the best perimeter defenders I've seen on the college scale. There's just so much size and athleticism and just tenacity. Like, you can't, they flattened out UConn immediately. And I was already kind of curious to see like what the offense is going to look like. Their formula to win that game would have been having a hot start from three. But like, they just couldn't create anything. Like, I look back to the NC State game that UConn ended up winning. And thing we talked about on the pod, I'm just like, why were the guards continue to go under on Paige Becker's screens? Like, she's a fantastic pull-up shooter. You probably shouldn't do that. South Carolina just didn't have that issue. Like, they were just attached to Paige from the opening tip, in which she came to the game a little bit banged up anyway, but she had nothing. And if she didn't have it, like, there was only so much the others could do as well. But what were your takeaways from that game?
Well, South Carolina's defense just set the tone. What Beal does defensively is just so tough to deal with because she and they hurt you in so many different ways. You want to run your actions, your sets. Okay, we're staying attached. We're going under when we need to. We're communicating. We're switching. Cutting the paint off so there's no openings. It's tough for you to create offense and create an advantage. And if you do, we're right there to help at all times. And that's something they've consistently done all season. And just to have that kind of team mindset defensively, like, it's just tough. It's tough when you're that good and you don't even know what's going to happen, you know, right? When you think you got an opening, now it's a late switch from Aaliyah Boston, you know, and now they're denying off ball. Mm-hmm. So even if you continue to flow, try and keep going with your stats, you're still in trouble, still looking around. Now you're up against the clock and it's just a very impressive stretch, especially those last two games they play defensively.
And defense, you would think, would fuel the offense. Like, that's the other thing. Like, UConn got, like, a C-plus, B-minus offensive game from South Carolina, and they couldn't capitalize because they absolutely got killed on the glass. The offensive rebounder from South Carolina, like, there just wasn't an avenue for them to win that game. It's just a wire-to-wire beatdown is what it felt like.
Wow. That's what, okay. What was the pun you said? You called him, you had a good run or something like that?
Yeah, more like you had a good run.
Nah, but yeah. No, South Carolina screen navigation, you can't beat it. Can't beat it. They're so good at mixing in overs and unders and switches to where you're completely off balance as an offense. So salute to them and the work that they put in to win that title.
There you go. Shout out to Don Staley for being a phenomenal ambassador for the game as well as head coach. Ending Gino Auriemma's championship winning streak. That's his first loss in a title game, which is insane to think about considering how long he's been there. And shout out to Leah Boston, National Player of the Year, gets the title. The redemption arc is here. This is something that I've mentioned on the You Late podcast that I host with Jasmine L. Watkins, where it's like, you know, last time we saw her crying face plastered everywhere, which TV crews really annoy me with that. Like, why do we have to spend 45 seconds staring at a player cry when we could just let them emote on the bench and let them have that instead of making a whole thing of it? But anyway, she bounced back from that, wins the title, and she basically says, like, hey, I saw all these pictures of me crying, so, like, here's my smile. You can use this one instead. Like, you know what? That's what I'm talking about. That's what we like to see.
Now I'm with it. I was letting you ISO on that one.
Oh, okay. That just annoys me because they do it, obviously, on the women's side and also the men's side, where it's like a team loses, a senior is crying, and now we have to spend the next 2.5 minutes looking at the dude crying. It's like, why? Stop. Weird. The zoom in on crying, the zoom in on injuries. We don't need slow-mos on injuries and instant replays on injuries where we have to watch that 6, 7, 8 times with different camera angles. Going back to the Arizona game during the tournament on the men's side. Like, we don't. Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to get big mad. It's
The hashtag is big mad, folks.
That's all I have on that. Anyway, what we are doing on this episode, we are going to bounce around some of the contenders, some of the dark horses, and get into our most pressing questions heading into this last stretch of the season / postseason. And we can kick things off with Phoenix, who has been far and away the best team in the West this year, far and away the best team in the league this year, top 5 offense and defense, coach of the year, front runner, top 3 guy in Monty Williams, like, depending on what the credit is.
Coach of the year.
Coach of the year, we're here? Like, that's okay. Yeah,
go ahead and get a Sharpie.
All right, there we go. Steve, is there anything to, I guess that'd be my question to you. Is there anything to question with this Phoenix team at this point?
Question, no. Questions to ask, possibly. I only have a couple with Phoenix because they have been excellent, been dominant, been great all season long. It's been an incredible season. My question is the secret sauce with Phoenix just putting size on Chris Paul, being active, keeping it in front, and now you make those screens with 8 and a switch that you can live with?
I think that's going to be the lesser of evils at this point. Like, just trying to flatten out Phoenix as much as you can in the half court. But even then, it's like, Ayton has made strides. As you pointed out many a times on the timeline on this podcast, Mikal Bridges' early draft screen just slipping out of him, like, he can get that pretty much whenever he wants to. Devin Booker can beat switches. The question mark is Chris Paul, but if he's just setting up the guy with a better size mismatch, then sure, you neutralize Chris Paul, who's going to take like 12 shots anyway. Congratulations. Here's a 30 ball from DeAndre Ayton. And so, like, I feel like that's probably the best bet because, like, my original thought would have been, okay, and this is something I wrote about a little bit earlier this year, like, okay, maybe you just trap Devin Booker, force them to make short roll decisions. And then DeAndre Ayton has shown growth in that area too. As an intermediate scorer, as a quicker processor, as a more accurate passer, we talked about the Minnesota game from a week or so ago where he just absolutely shredded them. Because that was that's their base scheme. Put 2 to the ball, rotate behind that. And if Ayton's doing that, what do you do? But I think that's, putting size on Chris Paul, just neutralize that pick and roll attack. It makes sense because you don't want Chris Paul getting busy against drop. You know he can get to the elbow pull-up whenever he wants to. He can make lobs. He can make skips. So if you want to take away the playmaking aspect and maybe that's your answer, because after Chris Paul, like, there is a drop in terms of, like, passing / playmaking ability. Devin Booker's made steals, but he isn't that. And then from Booker to Payne, Booker to Bridges, Booker to Cam Johnson, whenever he gets back, maybe that's the way you go.
No, yeah. My thought process is just, hey, what are teams going to try and do? Because Phoenix is really, really good at pursuing what they want and finding ways to bend until they get it. So my idea in the playoffs is, what does it look like if they can't get there? You know, is switching going to be the answer? We've seen their counter to it. I think the other part is, if you're a defensive team, you've got to mix your coverages up against Devin Booker and try and hope that can help that way. Mixing a trap, mixing a switch, mixing a drop, just something to keep him off balance. So I think he's the key. He's scoring and playmaking. It's really hard to deal with Phoenix. Really, really difficult. And the problem with switching against Booker is, yeah, you want to keep everything in front. You want to bog everything down, make them stagnant, hopefully. But then you also run into the problem of, we're trying to help against the switch, which is something I'm noticing a lot right now in particular. It feels like teams are okay, we're switching, but now we're over-helping after the switch. So you kind of undid the thing that you just did. So I'm just curious to see how teams try and attack and if they make him the focal point defensively and if they throw different things at him. But Phoenix is Phoenix. They're really good. It'll be fun to see them go on this journey.
I got you. And to the trap, you know, the mixing in the traps point, maybe that's something that we see when you have the Booker without Paul lineups, because those typically happen with a backup big. And so if you get, you know, forcing JaVale to make short roll decisions is a little bit different than Ayton doing it. Or if it's the Biombo game, like that's going to look a lot different than if it's Ayton doing it. And so maybe you can steal some possessions in like end of the first quarter, early second, and kind of do it that way. But as a base, I think we're in agreement. Like, I think switching is probably going to be the primary method that defenses go with. And good luck. I don't know. I have a quick rotation question for you. Just going to borrow this one from the most recent Low Post episode. What is their rotation? Do they go 9 or 10 deep, or do they go with 8?
That's a good question. I think they go 9. I would say 9 is probably the number for me.
So you have this, you have the starters. So you have Paul, Booker, Bridges, Crowder, Ayton. You're going to have, when healthy, the two Cams and Payne and Johnson. I would assume you have JaVale, which would be 8. And so I guess this is really me asking, like, what's your what's the confidence level in Landry Shamet right now?
Well, the reason why I said that, Torrey Craig and or Landry Shamet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't see both of them being out. I think it'll be dependent on matchups. I think they like what Shamet brings to the table with that second unit. And I think Torrey Craig is just going to get minutes because of his size, ability to defend multiple positions. I don't know if it's both, but it could be. I wouldn't be surprised if they go 10 deep and run an all bench lineup and then everyone yells at them because those are bad.
I it's going to be the Alonzo Mourning gift when Phoenix trots out Campaign and Landry Shamet and Cam Johnson and a couple of Torrey Craig and JaVale McGee. It's like they're the best team in the league also. Could probably have Paul or Booker or Ayton, like one of those guys. But anyway, Phoenix is really good. We'll see what the rotation, how the rotation shakes out. We'll see what defenses throw at them. They've been a buzzsaw all year long. So best of luck to the rest of the West.
Speaking of buzzsaws, the Memphis Grizzlies.
Still winning without Ja. We got an Xavier Tillman game recently. Hashtag draft good players. But do you feel better about Memphis's offense during this recent stretch?
I would say yes. It's hard not to with the way they're playing without Ja to be able to create these kind of looks. It's a big positive. Kind of ties into one of my questions I have for you. In, you know, can they survive if their defense isn't going? Do you feel better about their offense based on this stretch? Do you feel like it's the perfect thing they needed going into the playoffs?
I think they did it. I'm in a weird place with it because the offense has been better. They're knocking down shots, which is really the overarching theme, because, as you know, like from a scheme perspective, like I don't have real issues with what Phoenix does. I mean, with what Memphis does, especially when they're able to get into their stuff early. Like, I feel like they flow to different actions pretty well. I feel like they space the floor well. They'll mix up one shoot on the weak side. They may have two and have a pin and screen going. Like, they do good things on offense. My thing is like, okay, if Jaren's not knocking down threes and you have Steven Adams on the court and you have Ja, who's improved as a shooter, but you're still dug under on him, that's a lot of pressure on Desmond Bane and player X to knock down shots. And team defenses seem pretty okay with like shrinking the floor against them, which put me in this weird spot where I'm just like, okay, the process is good. The personnel is a little bit limited, but if you're inherently giving them open shots because you don't trust them, the playoffs are inherently small sample sizes. So like, it wouldn't surprise me if they just have a week and a half, 2 week stretch where Tyus Jones shoots 38% from three. Cal Anderson knocks down 36% of his open threes. And now it's like, okay, these guys are bad shooters, but they've hit enough. They've now won a game five and now Phoenix is in trouble or something. So like, I think for me, one, it's good to see them play offensively. Two, I wonder what this does for the rotation, if it does anything for the rotation. Because like, the big thing has been Dylan Brooks being back consistently and playing pretty well. And with some of the other role players that stepped up, like I mentioned, Xavier Tillman, who had started against Milwaukee and they just completely shredded Milwaukee. Like, do you get into some weird, we're going to play 10 or 11 during the first round of the playoffs, and now we got to shrink this to 9, but I'm not sure what the 9 is type stuff. So that's kind of what I have an eye on with in regards to Memphis at this point.
I guess the question would be, who on the bench would not be a part going forward? Tyus is in. Mm-hmm. Kyle Anderson is in. Zaire Williams is probably in. Brandon Clark.
That's the one, because Brooks is back. Is Zaire Williams going to be in? I feel like, are they going to play? Like, I know positionally they could play Jones and also Melton and also Williams. But are they going to do that? Like, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Melton or Williams. Because as you said, like, I think Kyle Anderson's in. I think Brandon Clark has played well enough to where if he's healthy, he's in.
No, yeah. I think they've got their bigs set, you know, so I don't think Tillman will be in unless needed in a pinch. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see.
Is there no Santi Aldama?
Who?
Okay. We don't have to be disrespectful.
Santi Aldama.
You know what? That's the first one. You got it.
Hey, got to get to the free throw line early in the game. Set the tone. Send a message. Dylan Brooks being back is key. How important is he going to be during the stretch? Because there were moments in the Phoenix game where I was like, this is why they have him around, mm-hmm. to do these things. Does that add an element to their half court attack? Or
it does. Like, it gives them a bailout guy. It gives them a reliable shooter. It gives them a guy that's willing to take on the toughest on-ball assignment. So Desmond Bane doesn't have to do it anymore. Or, you know, Zaire Williams was starting. He was taking a lot of that, too. Good experience for him. But in a playoff setting, like, now you can just say, all right, Dylan Brooks, go annoy this dude. Like, we've talked about it quite often, the battle with him and Donovan Mitchell, who ended up getting the best of him, but annoyed him to the point to where Donovan Mitchell is, like, jawing at him after every shot, basically. With how he was, like, you need that kind of irritant, I feel like. So he helps there. I say he's going to be a bailout guy. I also do worry about the 6-for-17 games that he can have in the playoffs, because he isn't afraid to take a shot. And so, like, that's going to be a balance that's going to have to be struck. But overall, he's going to be a positive. Like, Memphis is needed. Like, he's more than a 3-and-D wing, but they needed another wing that could shoot more than anything to kind of alleviate some of the half court concerns. He's definitely going to provide that.
He's definitely going to get him up. I'm intrigued to see if they can also keep Jaren Jackson Jr. going. Like, can they get all four of them going? But I think Memphis is set up for success. They've done a lot of good things. That defense has to hold up, though. That way they're not completely bogged down in the half court. I am interested to see how they respond to more of a game plan defense. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, We've seen at times teams have tried different things. Boston did a really good job of saying, hey, job, we're not coming out there. And when we switch, we're still not coming out there. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to keep everything in front. So how do they respond to those type of things? Can they keep their flow up? No real new questions. It'll just be fun to see them do it in the playoffs with this run. They've had an incredible year. I mean, what, first time winning the division. So salute to them. What's going to be the most annoying Memphis take in the playoffs?
The most annoying Memphis take in the playoffs. I'm already kind of tired of hearing about how young they are. I don't know if that counts.
Shocker.
What? What is that supposed to be? You say that like I have age takes or something on this podcast. That is wild. But I'm just like, this, like, they've already gone through a little bit of play-in / playoff adversity. And for them being young, like, they're all feisty dudes. Like, they're not guys that are afraid of them at all. Like, if there's a young group that's going to be measured by, it's just going to be encore performance for them. It's not going to be, oh, no, the road, you know, we're on the road, a team on the 8-0 run. Now it's going to spiral into a 19-2. That's just not Memphis. So I don't really care about that. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, I always laugh when the Desmond Bane draft thing is brought up because, yeah, he shouldn't have slid as far as he did. Shame on the other teams that let him slide. So that might be the only annoying one. I do have a quick Memphis question. I have a Jaren question for you. More important to their postseason success, Jaren's drives or his jumper?
Good question. I'm going to go with his drives. He can generate paint touches. That helps. Nah, I'm going to go jumper. He's going to have to knock some shots down for him.
Okay.
Space the floor, play the five when he does. I think him making defenses pay is going to be important. I think the drives are equally important, but I'll go with the shooting. Just okay. Because they need those to fall.
Okay. It's been such a weird, like, it's crazy that Jaren's been so good this year and is a legitimate contender for an all-defensive team. French defensive player of the year candidate, in my opinion. And then you look at the shooting splits and it's like, this doesn't look that much better than it was last year. And so, like, that's kind of, and that factors into the Memphis upside question that I have with them offensively, because it's like, again, process is good. Transition drives a lot of it. We'll see how much can be driven in the postseason. And then it's just like, for all the talk about shooting and needing guys to step up, like, Jaren seems to be the low-hanging fruit guy of the group. Whereas, like, we know he can shoot. It's been a bad shooting season for him to this point. But, like, if Jaren shoots 40% from three on, like, 7 attempts through the first 2 rounds, is anyone going to be surprised? Like, I don't think so. And if that is back, that's going to open up the drives, to your point, because he has taken steps as a driver this year. And so if he has both things going, he can really step in and be number 3 for them, maybe a number 2, depending on how much he scales up offensively, because they've gotten good stuff from Desmond Bane this year. Again, Dylan Brooks has stepped up this year. I'm really intrigued by this Memphis team. Are they the second best team in the West for you?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's all I need to hear. Let's.
I did some quick math. I was doing some quick math here.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly too quick, but it looks like the Grizzlies are 14-2 when Jaren Jackson hits 3 or more threes in a game.
Seems like a pretty solid bellwether for him.
Now, it was a quick math, so I may be wrong, but the two, I feel confident about that part. Got caught up scrolling in the winds, but hey, stats on the fly.
There you go. I may be wrong, but I doubt it. Shout out to hashtag is Big Barkley. Do you have Golden State questions?
Only one. Do you believe in their small lineup?
I think yes, depending on who's in it.
Draymond, Poole, Wiggins, Clay, Steph.
Yeah, like I'm good with that if everyone's healthy. Who's the four in that lineup for you? That Wiggins or Clay?
Positionless basketball, sir.
Ooh.
I think it's Clay defensively on paper, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Wiggins offensively.
Okay, I'll give you that. That's fine. But I genuinely want to know where you. I genuinely know where you were on that. Like the easy question is like, how concerned are we about Steph? Like, what kind of rhythm he's going to be in when he comes back? I don't know how to really suss that out. Beyond it, do you see a consistent role for Jonathan Kuminga once the playoffs hit? Or do you think Steve Kerr goes away from him? And I mean, Moody's not really, but what do you see for Kuminga in the postseason?
Probably a spot to give a burst of energy, potentially, if needed. I don't know if he's going to be leaned on. I'd probably have to be matchup based. It's kind of a weird deal because he fits in, plays well, and then, hey, we don't necessarily need him this time. You know, they just kind of have those guys that pop in and out of the rotation. Mm-hmm. I feel like Kuminga's probably going to get squeezed for Gary Payton minutes or Iguodala minutes.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, the quiet undercurrent of this is, like, Andre Iguodala was brought in specifically for the playoffs. And so I imagine, like, the ramp-up period is going to start now, especially with Steph out there. They're going to need the extra ball handling and decision-making. And so this would be a perfect opportunity for them to say, hey, we're going to play you 18, 20, 22 minutes. And then once the postseason hits, we'll see. And so I think I'm with you. Like, I could see Kuminga being the, okay, we're the offense is kind of in the mud. We need somebody to give us some energy, give us a jolt of something. We need some athleticism. I could see that. We've talked a lot about Jordan Poole throughout this season and how important his shot creation is going to be. Like, are you Jordan Poole is Golden State's blank best player? Where are you at with that right now?
I think Jordan Poole is Golden State's fourth best player, possibly third most important.
And I would imagine the three are what? Steph, Dre, and Clay, do you have above?
Yeah, I still have those three.
Okay.
All due respect, Clay is very good. But Jordan Poole, what, he scored 20 in what, 15, 16, 17 straight games?
He's on a monster run.
He's gotten right at the right time. That's what Golden State needed if they want to elevate that ceiling. So,
over their last nine games, since Steph went down, they are 3-6, which isn't great. However, Jordan Poole is shooting essentially 40%. It's 39.8, but he's shooting 40% from three on over 11 attempts. And a lot of those are off the dribble. Just an insane shot maker who blends that in with drives, and the passing reads are coming. And if he can handle more usage, like, that's going to help set the pecking order, I feel like. So obviously, it's Steph. If he can be your number two offensively, and you have Andrew Wiggins playing off of what he provides, and you have Klay Thompson just roaming around, like, okay, I'll fly off these screens. I'll relocate. There's 12 on the clock. I can post up this dude since, you know, defenders are probably going to be sending their two best perimeter defenders to Curry and Bull at this point. So if Klay is able to pick on mismatches or just weaker defenders, as well as Andrew Wiggins, like, that sets them up pretty nicely. And that also blends into your question about the small ball unit, because now if Klay, you know, Draymond's at the five, with those three plus Wiggins. Second round Western Conference Finals could be interesting with Golden State. We'll see. Confidence level in Steve Kerr right now?
Hasn't changed. He seems more and more upset the more I watch them.
Yes.
The hashtag has been big mad for what feels like a very long time. It's going to be, I think it's just going to be, can he hit the right pieces at the right time? Lineup wise, decision wise, blend offensively, those kind of things. So I still have a high confidence in him.
Okay. Has Draymond seemed okay to you defensively? He hasn't been, he doesn't look like the defensive player of the year form we saw before the injury. Are you just attributing that to him just ramping up, or do you think that's something to be concerned with heading into the postseason?
No concerns with Draymond defensively.
Sure.
I think it's just getting back into form more than anything else, because we see the flashes. Just hard to do that consistently. You know, that's like what he does defensively is not easy to do. So I think he shakes off some more rust. I think as the playoffs ramp up, you know, he'll show up. So I'm not concerned. I mean, Manuel had what, back in? that's a lot. I'm gonna let him give him a couple more games to warm up.
Sure. Fair enough. Let's move to.
You're not gonna get me to diss Draymond on this pod.
You'll end up on his pod. We don't need those problems.
Man, I saw a take. Nope.
Y'all out here saying like, not y'all.
You don't even watch the games. Not I.
Oh man. Now I need that. I need a Draymond. Because it's funny watching your timeline sometimes when you get the random, clearly you don't watch X team. I'm just like, if there's anybody on the planet to not use that against, it is Steve Jones Jr. Like, in the time it took for you to tweet that, you could have found a thread featuring the team that you're complaining about.
Just click on it. Just scroll. It's literally just film.
Like, absolutely not, bro. So yeah, I need Draymond to throw some shade at a Steve Warriors take, just so Steve can be like, well, actually, I have 12 threads on this. I was in the lead before you were. You know, I just need all of the. I need all of that. I need all of that.
No, I don't need any of that energy in my life. I don't need any of that. There's a short list of players that I'm not having any issues with on Twitter. CJ McCollum dunked on me one time.
Did he? Wait a minute.
Oh, you know about that?
No, I didn't. When was this?
Year they beat the Nuggets.
Huh.
Man, let's pause the pod real quick. You really didn't know about this, huh?
No, I didn't. Like, that would have been something that we talked about at some point.
Oh, yeah. Let me pull it up real quick.
Wait a minute.
May 12th, 2019. I'm doing a thread on the Blazers-Nuggets game.
Mm-hmm.
I post the clip. It's just CJ McCollum. Craig played a great 1v1 defense. What a huge shot. That's tough. And CJ McCollum said, great defense. My bleep. And it took off from there.
Wow.
I don't even think the energy was towards me.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't take that personally. Also, this further explains the Portland love. I feel you.
Like I'm not, from there.
I'm that's the joke. Oh goodness! I'm messing with you. It's fine. It's fine.
No, you just that's when. I mean, look, man. It's social media. You're gonna take an L at some point, and a lot of people think that the best thing to do is to tweet through it. Sometimes you just gotta shut up. Like my phone wouldn't stop buzzing for 3 days, and I'm like, guys, okay, that's fine, y'all got it.
You know what, you win. Alright, let's move. Wow, I've learned something new tonight. This is incredible. Okay, let's move to Dallas. I have a question about their big man room in the playoffs.
What big man room?
Well, there we go. One, that's disrespectful. We're not going to disrespect Dwight Powell on this podcast. Second, though.
Well, thing is the room has to have more than one person.
It's, you know, Cleveland can play some five, you know. What's the... No. Bueller. But no, like Dwight Powell's been good. Maxi Kleber, not so much offensively at the very least. Do you have any concerns about those two heading into the postseason?
No. Mainly because of the comfort level they have with Luka and that Luka appears to enjoy playing with both of them. Mm-hmm. And that's probably more valuable than the concerns, to me at least. Ever since that trade, it felt like Luka feels like Luka, and he likes playing a pick and roll with those guys. And that's going to be the key for them anyway. So if he has that comfort, and they have that knowledge base together and pick and roll where, hey, we know what to do versus switches. We know what to do versus two on the ball. We know what to do as far as drop goes. Like, they're geared towards him. And if you're gearing this towards him and they have the skill set to make defenses pay in multiple ways, you know, Powell's roles are important. His rebounding is important. And he didn't have to do much more than what he does. Mm-hmm. Defend, screen, roll, rebound. Got it. Maxie, you want to come join the party? Give me a roll or space the floor. Davis, go ahead, space the floor. Hey, you might hit four. You might go one for eight. It's fine. You do this in your two little stints and we'll be good. So I could understand the concern with their big man room in general, but I give them bonus points for how they operate with Luka. And I think Dwight Powell, on his really good days, like he had one against Milwaukee out of this world, when he can give you that rolling and then the defensive side as well, that's a positive. He fits what they do. Would that translate everywhere? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But I think he fits what they do, and I think that's a plus for Dallas overall.
Okay. I guess my thing was, like, one, when I was looking at Dallas, I'm just like, okay, Maxey has to make shots, which, duh. Like, he can't be, like, a 20% three-point shooter. Like, even with the defense, you're going to need him to space, because shooting is still going to be kind of the question mark with Dallas, offensively at least. And then with Powell, he has done very good things as a roller all year long. He's been an underrated role threat throughout his entire Dallas career. And so he has that. I guess I was kind of eyeing it. If they were to make the second round, then you're looking at a matchup with Phoenix. I'm just like, okay, what does this look like against a team that's going to switch a bunch probably? And from there, I'm just like, okay, do we have concerns about what Cleveland looks like if he's not knocking down shots? Are they going to get enough from Powell slips against Phoenix? And then with those two, like, neither of them have the size of a DeAndre Ayton or, like, size plus athleticism of JaVale McGee. Like, I wonder what that does to the rebounding for Dallas, which has been something to kind of keep an eye on with them all year long. And so that's kind of where my mind went with that.
No, that's fair. And I think overall, Dallas is a very interesting team in a playoff setting or conceptually when it comes to the playoffs. And I think they've showcased it in that Milwaukee game and in separate games this season. They have a formula. So we have Luka's shot making. We can put pressure on you in pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And kind of bend and play with that. And we have game plan defense at times where we lock in on your best option. We take that away. You got to deal with it, figure it out. We can play zone, whatever we got to do. That part is interesting to me. But the only problem with Dallas is it feels like they need all three. Like one of them can't go south. Like they don't have a lot of room for error as far as winning goes.
Yeah,
you're going to need Luka to hit those shots. You're going to have to be able to keep teams guessing and pick and roll. And your defense is going to have to show up. If one of those things fall apart, then the run is short.
Yeah, and they're going to be looking at, because right now it's Denver. It could be Utah, which we've talked about that a little bit before. But we'll get into Utah a little bit later. Let's move to Denver. Not 100% sure if or when we see Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. If we are to assume that those guys don't come back, who is Denver's second most important player for playoff success?
The easy answer is Aaron Gordon, just because of what he's tasked with defensively and the different things he can do offensively. But I'm going to move past that and pick a different one. It has to be a guard. I don't know if it's Monte Morris. I don't know if it's Will Barton. I don't know if it's Bones. One of them has to be able to make shots, either while spaced or in pick and roll, to make this run work. We saw it last year. Monte Morris pretty much won them a series against Portland.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to need that threat to make things pop. So I think it's got to be one of them showing up offensively.
I'm with you. It seems like we're on the same page then. But I wasn't going to go Gordon. Like, my answer was Will Barton, who I just haven't. It could just be the nights that I've caught Denver. But like, he doesn't seem to have the same juice as a shot creator as he has in years past. And I think in light of Murray slash Porter Jr. being out, like, I think they're going to need some sort of resurgence from him in that regard. As a guy that can help hold down the fort in non-Jokic minutes. Because what Bones Highland has been able to do post All-Star break is incredible, and even more incredible for a rookie. I would be worried about relying on that in the playoffs. Not that Bones can't do it, but if you're in that spot to where you need him to be a consistent 13, 15, 17 points off the bench guy, that's just a lot on him. That is a lot on him.
Bones Highland slander?
It's not Bones Highland slander.
Let me check his age real quick.
No, but I've said in an ideal world, it should be, all right, Monty is filled in the gaps. Will Barton, my pick, filled in the gaps. Oh, here comes the Bones Highland avalanche on top of that. Not Jokic is the leading scorer. Number two is Bones Highland because he has to do this. It's just a different level of expectation. So I think Will Barton as the vet, as a guy who has been at different times, like he's been kind of the secondary playmaker for them. He's been more of a 3-and-D guy. Like I think he has to be more secondary playmaker than 3-and-D for Denver to really make some noise beyond the first round this year.
I mean, it feels like a weird deal. I mean, Barton just had, what, 6 threes against the Lakers?
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like he's been tasked with doing a little bit more of the playmaking, and that kind of shifts your game a little bit. When you're a natural scorer or a quote-unquote bucket getter, you have a certain mindset. And when you're asked to do other things, you may play a little bit differently. So it's just interesting to see, can he find that blend? Because we know he can get hot, but how much is it going to be him creating for others or him creating for himself?
Got you. And I guess just to borrow from the Dallas question, how do you feel about Denver's big man room aside from Jokic?
I like what Denver has. I've liked what Boogie Cousins has brought to the table for them, just as far as fitting into what they do offensively, mm-hmm. and being able to create that flow, be a hub, give you some post-ups, some rolls. I think that's been good for that lineup and that unit. And, you know, he doesn't have to play a ton of minutes either. Especially this time of year. So Jokic is going to play his allotment, may even play more. So you just really need a couple good stretches out of the Boogie. And when he does give you a plus, that's a big boost for your team. When he doesn't, just go right back to Jokic. So I'm not as concerned. I know the question marks are probably going to come up defensively with Boogie Cousins because we do this every year.
I mean, it's a beef, man.
No, I mean, we can might as well just schedule the tweets right now. Second quarter at Nekias NBA. Where are you at? Look at this drop from Boogie Cousins. Silence. Good for him.
Good for him.
Next game. Hey, Steve, look at this. It's a tradition unlike any other.
Wow. It's a good shot, which opposing offenses may be able to get against Boogie Cousins in the postseason. Let's move on to Utah. I just had one question that I put in the doc. Is it time to call a curtains for Utah? Is this run just cooked? And I hate to get into like...
came out the gate trying to get me packed up by Salt Lake.
I'm not trying to get you packed up. And like, generally, like you can read my timeline and also listen to episodes of the podcast. Like I have been on like, hey, we shouldn't just chalk up Utah's regular season to meaning nothing because you don't believe them in the postseason. Like, I haven't thought that's been fair. I've said this. I've been on the record about it. However, this most recent stretch with Utah, where there are blowing leads, where the offense stagnates, and the defense can't get stops, and guys are getting beaten like drums off the dribble, and Gobert looks good 1 minute, doesn't look great the next minute. There just seems to be a lot of stuff with this team.
There's too much stuff going on right now, and it's happening at the worst time. So I don't even know what's happening with Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Because this stretch, that road trip they went on, buddy, lose at Brooklyn, lose at Boston, lose at Charlotte, lose at Dallas, lose at the Clippers, come home, beat the Lakers, lose at Golden State. And the way they've lost them. So it's always an interesting dynamic because they got the lead for a reason. So clearly there's still something there. But the way that they're losing it, and more importantly, how teams are treating and perceiving them, mm-hmm. brings up a question mark this time of year. So why? And this is crazy because they were flowing in both of those games, whether it was against Golden State, was against the Clippers. They looked like they had command and control, and then they lost it. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see how teams are just sensing that momentum and saying, hey, guess what? You two, Mike and Donovan, y'all got to score. And that's it. y'all got to score. The way that teams, the evolution of Utah's pick and roll attack has been really interesting to watch because there was no more automatic team in pick and roll than Utah last year.
Yep.
I mean, it was like a clinic. It was death to rotate against them. There are certain coverages you just didn't want to do because you knew what the result was going to be. That ball was spraying out. You had to worry about the roll. The gravity doesn't feel like it's there right now on those rolls. More teams are just willing to switch. Like if you pull up the list of people that have defended Rudy Gobert over the last week or so, you're like, huh? Maybe I'm putting Jordan Poole on him on purpose. Austin Reeves? Reggie Jackson? LaMelo Ball? And then you have the issue with the lineups in that I don't know what their best lineup is. Which is crazy because the whole point of this year was to not be able to ask that question. And here we are going into the playoffs asking that same question.
And I think the answer, for better or worse, is like their starting unit when healthy. It's been very good, but like it's also that feels like the only good lineup they have. And then that starting unit just blew the big lead against Golden State.
Yeah, there's such a weird disconnect. Like Donovan Mitchell is playing really, really well right now. I don't know how much of an impact it's having. Like it should. Like this should be elevating this team. And that seems like shade and a shot, and it's not. It just feels like teams are like, all right, cool. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Clarkson, come on. Like, it's their guards have to carry it, but their guards carrying it kind of hurt their flow. It doesn't feel like the creation is the same assist-wise. You know, as far as the ball movement goes, it feels like there are lineups where, hey, we're okay with this person shooting while they're spaced.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make the same pun joke I made last episode, but there's a couple people out there they're okay with letting it fly. So you combine all that and think about, this is the crazy part. We haven't even talked about the defense really. And that's the issue. There's no one thing. It's a rotating wheel right now for Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Because defensively you still have the, we're not containing the ball / we're over helping / we still got Rudy switching, not switching, helping. It just feels like too many problems at the wrong time of year.
Mm-hmm. And so I think just based on their personnel, like the offense has to course correct for everything else to make sense, honestly, because you mentioned like the guards have to carry so much of the offense. And I think some of that will be alleviated as Bojan Bogdanović gets back into the flow because he's been important for them offensively this year. But they have to carry it. And I'll say it so you don't have to. I'm worried about all three of those guards on defense at this point.
Excuse me? With Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson, who's the third?
Trent Forrest.
Okay. All right. Cool.
But I have my concerns there. And so I think you're going to need the path for Utah to make the kind of run that they need to salvage this season, which sounds dramatic considering like they could still win 50 games this year if they went out. But for them to salvage this season, like they need the offense to hum an incredibly high degree. And like to this point, like, I mean, they've been by offensive rate, like they've been the best offense in the league for most of the year. It has bought down in the clutch. to your point, teams are more willing to switch against them. And it just turns into pull-ups. I guess I'll just isolate this. Like, I'm just kind of concerned about Mike Conley.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Dunker Spots. Part two of this pod dropping soon. Nakia's ISO.
Wow. That's Steve leaving the pod. But no, like, I'm a little concerned because, I mean, I think the defense has slipped a little bit. And I look at the offense, and I don't think Mike gets to the rim to the same degree at this point. And I think that contributes a little bit to, like, the late game stuff, because it does turn into a pull-up slash floater fest for guys not named Donovan Mitchell. And I think that, again, Bulls bakes into the teams being more comfortable to switch against them. Like, I think it all kind of flows together. And so they need someone to kind of step up and alleviate that. Like, it could be Mike. It could be Bojan Bogdanović. But right now, like, it is a collective thing with those guards offensively to carry. But, like, a lot of this is just on Donovan to make something out of nothing. And the clutch numbers for him have been terrible this season. Like, I don't know if passing the ball to Rudy Gobert more on switches is the answer. It would be nice to see him do it a couple times. Oh, that's the one you're paying back in, huh? That's timely. To peel the curtain back. After I said I was worried about Mike Conley, Steve said that and then turned his camera off. The second I brought up pass the ball to Rudy Gobert, Steve turned the camera back on. It had the straightest face I've ever seen. Oh, goodness. But yeah, like, Utah's not in a great place right now. And someone has to pop for them.
Which is crazy because they're a 46-1 team still.
Yeah, like...
which is, I mean, but that's part of winning in this league. That's the difficulty of winning in this league. That's the difficulty of perception in this league. I don't even think this is a bad year for Utah. For what they were trying to do and what they had just done, it comes off a different way. And now it's like, what's their matchup? They want Golden State or they want Dallas?
Yeesh. Like, probably Dallas, but even then.
Well, I mean, with Dallas, of the players that you feel good about Rudy switching against, Luka's probably up there. And then that could just turn to a sidestep, step back fest. And I could be loud wrong.
Rudy Zubac?
Yeah, he might. Man. Keep Dallas away from the Clippers. But that's the thing. They could find the matchup, fix it, and still make a run.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of question marks right now at the wrong time for me. Like, we should only be talking about, hey, is their defense going to hold up? Not, this is what's happening to their offense. And they're still scoring. But it's the process has to be better. It feels more stagnant, more staring at each other. Just a lot of non-Utah things right now.
It's very weird. Quiet is kept. Utah only a game and a half ahead of the Timberwolves for six.
Oh, Utah. this is why we did this segment. I got you now.
No. No. Like, that's... You think about that, though. If Minnesota moves to six and you get Utah Clippers for the first play-in game, the Clippers would have a shot. I think that's fair to say. And then you get into the second play-in game against New Orleans or San Antonio right now, because I don't want to talk about the Lakers. I'm good. Like, if they get the second play-in game against New Orleans, New Orleans has a shot in the one game. Like, Jose Alvarado's absolutely going to strip Donovan Mitchell at least once.
I love the journey of this, because I think you started out saying how we shouldn't ruin Utah's season. And we've landed that they might fall into the play-in and lose.
If they don't right the ship, like, it's not that far off. But, like, no, they just – my overarching thing, like, they need to correct the offense. Like, I don't know how much better the defense gets, just to be frank about it. Like, the personnel is the personnel. We went into the season asking, hey, can Utah go small? The answer was no. And then Joe Ingles got hurt. And then they got the trade deadline, and they traded for Knox. They still can't go small.
Well, they traded for him, and then he
and just then they, yeah.
doesn't
yeah.
play.
I, for one, am shocked that Quinn Snyder looked at Nah and said, nah.
It's a good shot.
If he took more of those, then he would probably be in the rotation. But
two for two from the line.
You know, sometimes you get the green release. Got to learn you.
We've asked a lot of big man room questions, and I'm surprised you didn't look at the room with Greg Monroe and Hassan Whiteside and ask the question.
Utah's making me sad, man. They're making me sad. And it's weird because, like, Hassan has been, at least the first half of the year, like, Hassan was actually pretty solid. It's kind of gone the other way in the second half of the season. And Grant Monroe, I will just say I have some concerns with him. You can probably wager what they are. There's been some film of what he's done. And so...
this man just got back in the league.
He did. He did. There was also probably a reason why he's now getting back into... All right. Do we have Clipper questions? I'm not going to do Wolves talk to you tonight. If you have Wolves question, feels free. Like
No, we'll save the Wolves. I just have one question. Is this set up for the Clippers to ruin Minnesota and or the Grizzlies season?
That could be the pathway. Paul George is looking pretty good. Shout out to Robert Covington for the most random 40 ball.
And the way he did it too. 43. And he made all the threes.
He just dotted them up. I'm just like, what the heck? Robert Covington. Making my Roko tank from the trade look bad. You know, you love to see it. Because I said something along the lines of, like, he feels more like throw in E in his deal. With Norman Powell kind of being the piece. And he has flown around. I even mentioned, like, the defense hasn't looked the same. He comes to the Clippers. He is racking up weak side blocks. He is flying around. The switching hasn't been great, but it's been pretty solid. And then he can explode. I don't want to say he can explode for games like this. Like, he doesn't drop 40 on the regular. But he can knock down shots. He's been much better than I expected. So I will graciously take my L on Robert Covington.
If only.
If.
Yeah. The Clippers Grizzlies series would intrigue. I'm intrigued by either series that Memphis currently looks like they might be in.
Mm-hmm.
But the Clippers' ability to have Paul George back, which helps their offense because, A, you can run a lot more stuff. You can actually run him off movement screens instead of trying to do it with Marcus Morris Sr. All due respect, it's a little different when he's coming off a stagger and he catches and holds. It's wow, okay.
But he does.
But you got Reggie Jackson more comfortable doing Reggie Jackson things, and we know what they can bring defensively lineup wise. So I'm intrigued to see what the Clippers could throw at them. Now, honestly, what they may throw at Minnesota. They've been prepping for that game for like 2 weeks now.
Feels like it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they have some things up their sleeve for the young Wolves.
Yeah, they're just going to talk. Nick Batum is going to either get Cat or D'Lo, and they're just going to switch whatever, and they're going to swarm around, and they're going to dare Cat to make passes without him being like double-tap circle for flashy passes. And then it's going to be a turnover fest, and then the Clippers are going to run and knock down shots, and then the Wolves are going to look out of sorts. Like, that is just the roadmap is what it feels like. which would be a total damper on the year that they've had and the growth that they've made.
Well, hey, at least you don't have the nightmare scenario of Minnesota losing that game and then losing to the Lakers.
Yeah, because that would be bad. Imagine if the Lakers were in. But certainly spice up the back end of the play-in race, wouldn't it? Tough scene. Did you have play-in questions before we moved to the West? I mean, to the East?
No. Not yet. Tease that for later.
Company man, I respect it. I respect it. Let's move to the East. Are you as intrigued by Jimmy Butler at the four lineups as I am with Miami?
Probably not. But I think it's fun. Well, I know you're very intrigued by it. At least I think I do. That's my guess. I guess I'll reverse it with the question. What's the best Jimmy at the four lineup?
Best, because they don't really go Jimmy at the four until they start getting into like the hybrid second unit stuff. But I think in general, it would probably be Lowry. They'll train super small, but probably like Lowry and Hero for sure. I'm kind of toggling between Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent. So they could go super small with three guards. And then Jimmy at the four with Bam.
Is the issue the makeup of this team makes it so you really can't do that much?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing.
Because you have PJ Tucker.
Oh, I forgot PJ.
No, so I mean like even yeah, if PJ's in saying. There.
Yeah.
To make it tough. I'd like to see Jimmy more maybe with some shooters, second unit wise. Throw it out there, but they seem pretty built on their rotation. How about old Max Strus deciding, hey, I'm not done?
He made the push.
Let me go ahead and get loose again, get back in this rotation. It looked like
he looked like the odd man out when Victor Oladipo was coming back.
Yeah, he shot his way right back in there.
They were already weaning him off the bottle.
Who's more important for Miami, Max Strus or Victor Oladipo?
Yes, no, I'm just kidding. The answer, I think it's. That's a good question because like they feel like they are the wild card spot. I think on the bench, like Hero's obviously in. Vincent is in. I would probably say Strus. Because I think teams defend him like a shooter. If he can knock down enough shots, I think he's going to be a guy you have to account for. And if he can hold up defensively, he's going to be kind of tough.
Well, yeah, I think if he holds up defensively, he gives you the size and you can play him with a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a bonus, but a bonus that can really help you out facing the floor, shooting, burn off sets, feeling okay switch-wise some nights. Oladipo, for me, is still just a major bonus for them. Like, I don't even have expectations for him come the playoffs. But you see the vision sometimes of, okay, that's what he could bring to the table.
Yeah.
Now we're flowing into Oladipo and Hero doing things with the bench unit. Okay. That can sustain them. That kind of feels like Miami's thing right now. Like, I feel like they're at their best offensively when it's just a wave of people just kind of doing things and they finish it off, which I still think more Kyle Lowry in the fourth as an initiator is going to be the move. I think he's the X factor still. So I'll just repeat that again. How much of this run is going to come down to was Tyler Hero good?
My answer remains an uncomfortable amount. Tyler Hero will not be afraid of the moment. Tyler Hero is good enough to win games for you down the stretch because we've seen him do it multiple times this season. The fact that he still remains Miami's best half-court shot creator is troublesome. Because he doesn't create, like, he doesn't create real advantages, or he doesn't bend defense to open up things for other people consistently enough for me to feel comfortable. Like, I think you get him against drop, he's fine. If you switch against him, that can get a little dicey. If you trap him, that can also get a little bit dicey. And even with the drop, like, it's not drop plus aggressive help elsewhere. Not often. Like, the end of the Toronto game was interesting because they were sending two to the ball with him. And he was able to make them pay. But, like, that's not something that we've seen consistently. And Toronto is the team that's going to send a bunch of extra help just because that's what they want to do versus they're scared of you.
I only ask that because after watching that Toronto game, I'm intrigued. In theory, you need Tyler Hero's shot making to convert into teams are trying to take him away. Hmm. And now that opens things up. So if he can get to a place where more teams are sending to the ball or are showing help and that can create plays, that's a big win for Miami. Hmm. Like, I think you take that all day, every day. Now the question is that going to convert? And how many shots does he have to get up to get that to be a thing?
Yeah.
You know, how much shot making does he have to do to get the two on the ball, to open the plays up? Because at the end of the day, Miami just needs one person that the defense says, hey, we're trapping. Just one at some point.
Yep.
Or, hey, we're coming to the level. Just to open up something that will create an advantage for them. Because even with Hero against the Raptors, at two good buckets for year at seven, wasn't the cleanest way to get it to him, but he got it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you can have that with the quote unquote second unit lineup, not bad. That'll give you at least a little bit of a gap offensively. But it just feels like, can he make the shots they need him to make? Because even if it's a different kind of shot making, they still need that, like just to go get a bucket. And can they keep him on the floor defensively? Mm. Seems like they're going with a lot of switch and show help or switch and double, which is fine until they can't do it and they need him to be on the floor. But that's not new. It's the same thing we had with Hero, Dragic, Robinson. Like, they just, those guys have to be able to stay on the floor for Miami to really hit their ceiling.
Indeed, indeed. Just to bounce off of your question about Hero, when is Bam going to answer this question? Like, solidly. Like, I'm sorry we had to come back here, but this is like, I tweeted it during the Raptor game early on, and where I'm just like, you know what? His mid-range jumper is probably going to swing the series one way or the other. Because they're going to need him as an intermediate creator. They already use him as, like, they less so this year than last year, but they still use him as a handoff hub and as a double hub. Like, they are going to need the offense from him. And if he's able to step up as a scorer, as a guy that can get to the free throw line, as a guy that can mix in mid-range jumpers or floaters, like, then you won't need Tyler Hero to do as much as he does. You won't need there to be a small guy on the other side that Jimmy Butler can pick on late games. Like, in theory, you would have three. You add in Kyle Lowry if he's taking more of the reins, which shout out to Kyle Lowry, who has been tremendous as of late. He has ramped it up. He has been more aggressive. It would be nice if they could finish games with that kind of wave, with those four guys doing different things. So I don't know. I'm just keeping an eye on Bam.
I just don't know what it changes. Because that shot making from Bam is going to be similar to the shot making Hero in a sense, right?
Yeah, like Bam mid-range jumper isn't going to force a double team.
But yeah, that's my overall thing. So while it's important, I don't want to dismiss it, but at the same time, I don't know if it changes how teams look at them. I don't think it changes how you use Jimmy and Bam together and pick and roll, those kinds of things, which I think is overall more important for Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if Bam comes out and hits the first four shots of the game, does the defense blink?
Probably not.
And I guess that's my concern, because then say he comes out aggressive and misses the first four shots. Now he might not take one for like 6 minutes.
Yeah, and he can't have that stretch. I don't think he can afford to have that stretch. With Milwaukee, if we can move. Are you concerned about Chris Middleton? Because, like, I haven't loved his recent stretch of games.
Hashtag is Big Shock. I did not have this in my show sheet. I'm going to let you go ahead and clear out. Go ahead and post up in the middle of the floor, a la Middleton.
It, I respect it. Like, it's one of those things to where I would just like for him to be really finding his flow on both ends heading into the postseason. More so than like, oh no, he's going to fold and be a bad player or something, because I don't believe that. It's like, even, you know, looking at the month of March, like, he shot well, he scored pretty efficiently. But like, there's just still stuff with the handle. Like, the defense hasn't been as tight. He hasn't held up as well on switches. Some of the off-ball lapses have been a little bit more frequent, which is, I don't know how much to attribute that to regular season malaise and how much of that is him legitimately slipping a little bit on that end. But they're going to need him to tighten up. So I'm just, is this just a blip on the radar for you with Middleton, or are you concerned about him at all?
Blip on the radar.
Okay.
He's done this for too long. He is who he is at this point, and he's proven at a high enough level to not have those kind of questions. Now, it's clear they need him to do better to succeed. If they're going to hit their goal, he can't do this, but I'm not putting him as a question mark right now, just because we've seen him have a 2-for-10 game, all of a sudden hit 5 in a row. And he can get hot real quick. So, I mean, they need him. They need all three. They need Drew too. Who, by the way, that pull up three, it has been it has been on fire this year.
It has.
He's made some big shots for them. He's gonna keep making some big shots for them. Are you concerned with their defense yet?
I'm less concerned about it now. Again, like, I think Brook has looked better defensively early on than I anticipated him. I think, and I'm pretty sure I posed this to you last time we talked about the Bucks. Like, I'm keeping an eye on Wes Matthews as kind of being the proverbial PJ Tucker replacement this year, as the guy that's being asked to punch above his weight defensively and also knock down the open shots that defenses are giving him. It's really weird that teams just don't care about Wes Matthews taking jumpers.
I think it's just the poison they're going to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Which feels weird because of his ability to shoot, but hey, we can't take everything away.
Yeah, like, it's just, I don't know. Because, like, I just have, like, the Portland stretch still in my head where I'm like, no, this dude can ball. Like, why is he being left open in the corner? It's kind of weird. And, like, the shooting hasn't been great for him this season, but, like, he is a guy that has a history of shots. Like, he's not a non-shooter. And so that's been weird. Are you worried about honestly, I don't even know if I have the size concern. Well, the size with their small ball units, are you still keeping an eye on that?
I'm just concerned with the concepts of their small ball unit. So if you're going to have Giannis switching, why are you also showing a whole bunch of help when they're driving against Giannis?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're opening plays up, you're stepping up, you're giving up kicks. Mainly in that Dallas game, that felt weird to me. Like, I know the Bucks like helping and have overhelped before, but that was like, well, that's Giannis, and this is your small lineup. Why are you doing this? And then I guess my other concern defensively is just they have the scheme versatility, but it very much right now feels like each guy does their thing, and that's that. Bobby Portis is in the game, two on the ball. Brooks in the game, probably a drop, or he'll start the level and then it's a drop. A little too automatic for me.
You don't see, like, the possession to possession changes. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yeah. Which is, I felt like they had that last year in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Where, hey, we're trying different things. We can throw out different things with our different lineups. Right now, it feels very much like player X does X, player Y does Y. So, you know, you bring Bobby back in, now it's two on the ball. You got to deal with that. You bring Brooke back in, now it's a drop. You got to deal with that. Okay, now let's go small. That part I'm a little concerned about. And the offense. There's no seasoning right now.
How do we keep
these? Are just my concerns. Milwaukee's really good, by the way, folks. Do want to get that out of the way. But why is Giannis Antetokounmpo rolling towards the side with two players on it? Why? Why is that a thing? Why, when you find something, you just don't run it again? Why would you have Drew and Giannis screening for Chris Middleton and Drew rolls to the dunker spot where Giannis is rolling? Why are these things that are still happening?
Like, I feel like the Bucks are the Bucks away from being the league's best offense, because they've been an elite offensive team this season, despite having the issues that you talk about.
Well, just think about how good they would be if they actually punished and executed teams. Like, they've made some shots. Like, there have been waves of fourth quarters where you have to deal with Giannis, Andrew, and Middleton, and you have not done it successfully, and now you lose. Just imagine if you were also putting pressure on teams the other way. Now you have to deal with our sets and our players and our talent. Good luck.
We see it in doses. And then I get excited. And it's like, okay, this is what we were promised. This is why the Bucks are coming out of the East. I do still think they're coming out of the East, to be fair. But like, this is why they're coming out of the East. And then here's a Drew Giannis pick and roll in the middle of the floor. Or here's a Chris Giannis pick and roll with Giannis rolling to the left and Drew Holiday is spaced on the left wing. So his defender just tags the roll and gets back on Drew. And then Drew dribbles and then takes a contested three. And then they're going back the other way. And it's just like, oh, they use their three best players together, but at what cost?
What's their best small lineup?
Drew, Giannis, Chris, Patton, Wes.
Okay, sounds right.
Is that the five? I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody. Like, Grayson Allen, when he isn't getting hunted on defense, is probably a better option than one of those guys. Just because you have to account for the movement threes, and he can attack a closeout, which is more that can be said about Wes at this point offensively, but also trust Wes on defense more than I trust Grayson Allen. So it's kind of, I think it's the Bucks big three plus Pat, and then it's who's playing better / getting hunted less or getting ignored less between Grayson Allen and Wes. What would you say their best small ball lineup is?
I'd go with the one you said.
Okay. We're on the same page. Okay. Did you have more? We can move.
No, but we can move.
All right. The Philadelphia 76ers. My question for you is, what is your concern level with James Harden?
Not very high. What's yours?
I'm a little bit concerned. Like, I would probably say a 6 out of 10, maybe. 6.5. It's creeping up. Because for me...
What's this man got to do to get some respect from the guys dunking?
I would like... What do you mean?
You took this 4 days off, and now we're right back at it.
I don't like this bit. I don't like this bit. Like, I feel like this is...
Me neither.
Not even a bit. Like, the burst has not been there for him this year. Like, it feels like the hamstring is probably still bothering him a little bit. The burst is not there, which has led to the shot profile to lean more to the threes. And the threes aren't falling at the same clip. And so if he isn't able to get downhill with the same ease, then that leads into games like last week where teams are a little bit more willing to switch. And like, okay, let's see if we can flatten them out a little bit. And Harden against switches, at least in Philadelphia, hasn't always been great because the shot selection hasn't been that great. And the drives haven't been that effective. Go ahead.
I'm not concerned, if only because we actually saw him get back to mismatch hunting and attacking certain players to get certain switches. So the burst is the key. It is the most important. And we saw a game against Cleveland where this man's turning the corner left and right in pick and roll. Not even just in the one-on-one against Lowry, but able to turn the corner, hit some hesitation moves, get in the paint. When he's able to do that, opens everything up.
Yeah.
You got the late roll. You have the pop. You have the, all the things that you are looking for. Now, as far as what happened, if we're going to talk about a concern, it's the late switches for me against Harden and Embiid late in the clock. That's going to be the one for them where teams starting to drop. Harden comes off. Now they turn into a late switch. And you have to make a quick decision, but you only got 5-6 seconds on the clock. Hmm. Now it's they're being dictated to take that shot. And overall, in general, like they're going to have to figure it out on the fly with these reps because I'm sure whoever Joel Embiid has guarding him, he feels like, please give me the ball. And right. I'm sure whoever James Harden has guarding him, he says, I'm going to keep the ball. So now they kind of have to flow. Which Harden game do you have? Does he have it going? Is he able to draw defense? You know, ideally, it's not just a step back. Let me beat him real quick for some help and open a play up. Mm-hmm. But that does mean Embiid's going to stand. And do you post him and get the double? Do you have enough time to do that? That becomes my concern with when it's their switching. But I feel like if he's right and he's shown enough burst in this Philly stretch for me to feel comfortable, mm-hmm. I'm not concerned. If he was looking like he did at times in Brooklyn, as far as this looks like HB dive. And the drives to the paint look like 3-yard gains, then that'd be an issue.
I got you. I think, yeah, if he's bursty, that alleviates a lot of it. I think the lack of burst is where I'm just like, okay, if he can't get to the rim consistently, if it's just going to be the step back, obviously he can get hot on it. Like he turned himself into an offense onto himself in his prime because he was knocking out that shot. But defenses would generally live with that versus, oh no, we have a wing defending Joel Embiid now, and now he has the block at the mid post. We kind of have to send help because otherwise he's just shooting over the top, or he's bullying a dude for a bucket, or bullying a dude for a bucket plus free throws, or just bullying a dude and getting to the free throw line, and he can wreck that. And so I'm just kind of keeping an eye on what that dynamic is. But zooming out, that still just kind of comes down to heart and health. Because if he's healthy, then I think he's more inclined to mix up the step backs with getting downhill and forcing help down.
James Harden's still really good. I feel like people forget that sometimes. He's still pretty good. A little older, so you're not going to get the same turbo button every night. But when he's able to hit it, it's tough. Now you've got a decision to make defensively. Which coverage do we really want to go to?
All right. Did you have any other Philadelphia questions?
Why does it feel like George Niang is just so incredibly important to this team?
What's the rest of the forward room for them? Like, it's him and Tobias. That's kind of
right. All right. You know, I was thinking more like the shot making and all that. It's fine though. Don't worry about it. What's the next game? Bulls? Fine. Don't worry about it.
I understand where you
go. Chicago Bulls. What happened there?
Oh, man. Where are we at on Chicago's defense? I have defense questions and I have young guy questions with Chicago.
Go ahead. Let him fly.
Well, the defense and the young guy thing is actually kind of baked in. Because Patrick Williams is back, and the flashes have been tantalizing on both ends. We'd like for him to take more open threes, shoot it in rhythm, versus, you know, catching and driving as often as he does. But, like, I get it. It's not necessarily a bad process. It's more of a hey, let's see you fling it up. We're going to need you to space the floor too type thing. But I don't know. Like, I feel like depending on what game I'm catching Chicago, I feel fine with Vooch defensively. And then other times I'm like, this is going to be a problem in the playoffs. And now that they're getting healthier, it's making it more difficult for me to suss out, okay, Vooch is more exposed because his best defenders are out versus, okay, these are the inherent limitations of Vooch in space. And so I'm trying to balance that with Patrick Williams coming back. Like, how much can he alleviate that as he's back? Same thing with Alex Caruso, as he's trying to, again, find his rhythm. Billy Donovan's trying to find the right amount of minutes, trying to find the right rotation pattern for him as he gets himself back and stuff. And so I'm just kind of like, what's going on here? Will they be able to have this right by the time the postseason starts? And if we're zooming out with just the young guys in general, it's the Patrick Williams thing. And also, what has happened to Coby White? Okay, are you seeing anything aside from just the missed shots from him? Like, does this process seem off to you at all?
I mean, it's just the missed shots for me right now.
Okay.
He kind of turned into a 3-and-D guy, and if the threes go away, it doesn't necessarily look the same.
Okay. All right, and zoom back in a little bit. Like, where are you at on Chicago's defense?
I think it's okay, but I mean, it's a defense that's built on bending and not breaking. It's doing a lot more breaking right now. You know, whether it be scheme related, whether it be one-on-one matchups, they kind of have to do a certain amount of things to get stops, but they have to do it over and over again. So it just kind of feels like they're not as connected as they were earlier this season on that end of the floor.
Gotcha. Do you want a quick stat real quick, just to laugh at the absurdity of this recent run for everyone?
No.
Okay. Well, then never mind.
No, I do.
Okay. So over their last 10 games, so just filtering last 10 games for everyone, Chicago is 25th in defensive rating at 119. 24th is Milwaukee. 23rd is Minnesota. 22nd is Dallas. 26th is the Clippers. 27th is Denver. And 28th are the Lakers. It's like that whole low to mid 20s group are playoff slash playoff teams. And then the Hornets at 21 and the Jazz at 19.
Who's number one?
The Memphis Grizzlies.
Of course.
They are doing the darn thing, is what they're doing.
No, I mean, it's little stuff for Chicago. Like, I feel like more teams put DeMar in action, and for some reason, Chicago doesn't necessarily execute a scheme with it. Like, it seems like he's ready to switch and they're not. It's like an easy roll.
Mm-hmm.
Just little stuff like that. Like, the help just doesn't feel the same like it was earlier this season.
Yeah, they were flying early in the season. And a lot of what made them successful defensively, not only were they flying, they were also forcing a bunch of turnovers. And like, they just haven't been able to get back to that level of chaos in the second half of the year. And them still not having Lonzo Ball hurts that quite a bit. And I'm still not sure when he comes back. So I'm not sure what the upside is in terms of just the turnover forcing.
Nah, that makes sense. I mean, it's tough when your defense is predicated on help.
Mm-hmm.
And your rotations are off. Doesn't take much. It's the old Denver dynamic where, hey, sometimes it looks really good, sometimes it doesn't. Right now, it hasn't for a little bit.
Gotcha. Well, speaking of that last 10 game list, Memphis has the best defense over the last 10 games. Do you know who's second?
Toronto Raptors.
The Toronto Raptors, who are now a top 10 defense overall this year. They're 7-3 over their last 10. They've had some impressive wins over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Is it time to rethink their ceiling? Are you higher on them now?
No. I'm still confused.
Still confused. Toronto is they're in six, but they're in the virtual tie with Chicago right now for the fifth seed. They are 2.5 ahead of Cleveland, which, God bless Cleveland. It's been a lot of Moses Brown lately. But man, this, like, I'm also confused, but I'm also like, Toronto's just good when their top seven guys are healthy. Like, it was nice to see Fred VanVleet look spry on Sunday. That's the word. There we go. I can speak. It's nice to see him look spry defensively against Kyle Lowry in the Lowry return game, which was fun. We've talked about the steps that Scotty Barnes has made. Pascal Siakam making an All-NBA case this year. Gary Trent Jr., his shot making and the defense that he provides. Precious Achiuwa's run. Like, they're just a team that's figuring out some stuff. They're figuring out the defense. They're still flying around in transition. They're still getting busy on the offensive boards. Pascal Siakam has been mismatch hunting in pick and roll for most of his stretch since December. Like, I would not, you know, we talked about some of the process issues that Milwaukee's had on offense. If their first round is Toronto, that doesn't sound like fun.
If only.
No, there was a podcast that talked about this.
I mean, not only that, I'm pretty sure I asked you before then, hey, are you ready for a Bucks-Raptors playoff series? And you threw me over the top rope.
Nah, just hit you with the stunner.
And now, I mean, Toronto can cause, you look at who they could face, and if they are right defensively, that could make things real interesting. Hey, Boston, we'll switch. If they switch. See, that's my problem with Toronto. I have an idea of what they should be and what they could be, and then they do it, and then they don't do it. But hey, Boston, we can switch, make things tough on you. Milwaukee, come bring those offensive issues over here. Philly, we'll switch. You guys figure that out for seven games.
Like, that's the one. I wouldn't want that from Philly.
You got Raptors in six, huh?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I wouldn't. Yeah, we're not repeating the Cavs thing where I'm just like, hey, this is an annoying team. I wouldn't want to see them. Philly fans immediately like, well, they're better than them. It's like, yeah, I didn't disagree with that. I said that's annoying. Whatever. We don't have to rehash Twitter. It's fine.
But they're going to pack you up another nice cheesesteak.
I don't think it'd be a nice cheesesteak. But Toronto's interesting. They get the right matchup. Like, they're going to push someone in the first round. And all it takes is the right one. The defense is good. They're a rangy group. They can flatten you out. They can force turnovers. And if they're able to get in transition, like, that alleviates some of the half-court offensive concerns that you may have. Ooh. Toronto looks good right now. That's kind of where I'm at. I will cap this with one play-in question. In light of the recent Ben Simmons news, he's officially been ruled out for the rest of the regular season and the play-in games, I guess with an S, depending on where Brooklyn lands and or how they play in those games. Does this add to... I've had some questions about their collective size and just the wing room in general. Like, the expectation for me is like, okay, if they get Simmons back, that alleviates a good bit of this, and then they have more options. But if he just isn't going to be there at all, the three guard stuff is incredible offensively. But like, there have just been so many instances where I'm watching Patty Mills get posted up, Seth Curry get posted up. I don't like them giving a team a mismatch to attack off rip. Like, we talked about this with the Charlotte Nets game a week or so ago, to where they immediately went, all right, cool. PJ Washington, Miles Bridges, get after Seth. Get him in foul trouble. And so, like, do you share those kind of concerns about their size? Or am I
it's not ideal this time of year to have multiple lineups that are going to have that. But at this point, they kind of have to lean into it. Their team is their team right now. Mm-hmm. And we saw them try and navigate with different lineups, different size, structure, trying different guys so they can have a wing and defense. And kind of just kind of lead into who you are and hope what you've done can carry on. But yeah, you don't want to put Seth Gorham, Patty out there, Kyrie, but you're going to have two or three small guys out there. Mm-hmm. So you're just going to have to navigate and hope your help is built in. Hope you can get some doubles in. Hope you can navigate it to the best of your abilities. Because who would you even put in? You put James Johnson in there for a few minutes. Kessler, maybe. But these are your guys, and you got to score. You know, defense is great. You want the activity. You know you need that to raise your ceiling, but you got to score.
I got you. Are you intrigued with Blake Griffin getting minutes as of late?
I'm not doing it.
What do you... I felt like that was a fair question. I was, you know, trying to get your thoughts.
Are you intrigued with Blake Griffin getting minutes?
That's a word, yeah. Like, huh?
See, look at that. I thought this was going.
On a more serious note, how have you felt about Kyrie's workload? Well documented that he is just now getting the full time tag now. He's averaging a shade under 41 minutes over his last six games. He's shooting well from three. Inside the arc, not so much. And it's not like he's alleviating that with a bunch of free throw attempts. I've been impressed with the defensive effort, but I also feel like that initial effort is good, and then he gets blown by and he's out of the play. There's been a lot more like late switches with him over the last few games. Are you concerned about that? Or, again, is this just me galaxy-braining things?
Galaxy-braining. I mean, Kyrie's okay. Kyrie.
All right. I just wanted to see. Like, this is, they're going to need, if they're going to be in the play-in, going to need those guys in tip-top shape. So,
are you concerned with the Nets as far as the play-in goes right now?
A little bit. Like, I would like for them to get, they need to get the 7 or 8 if they can. I don't love them being in the 9-10 bracket because I think Atlanta or Charlotte can knock down enough threes to where that could be a problem. Like we just saw, again, the Charlotte win in Kyrie's home debut to where they were able to find some things because for their flaws, like they can just toss out a bunch of 6'6" to 6'10" dudes plus Terry Rozier. And that's where the three guard line can be like, okay, y'all better make shots then, because otherwise it can get a little bit tough for you. So we've seen that formula. And then over the weekend, you see what Trae Young can do to you in a single game. And they do have shoot, like as frustrating as this team has been, as unhealthy as they've been, as blessed the defense has been for most of the year, they've been an elite offense all year long. And so getting either one of those teams in a one-off is concerning because all it takes is the one game every 3 months that Kevin Durant can't knock down shots or Kyrie having an off game and you get threes from the other end. It's just like, oh, well, Brooklyn is chilling.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendra Perkins, April 2nd. The Brooklyn Nets are playing with fire, especially when it comes to the teams that they could possibly face in the play-in tournament. I mean, they can't guard senior citizens at PE. Carry on, ..
Waiting until the very end of the pod to drop one is insane.
You got to admit, that was pretty good, though.
That was pretty, yeah, that. I hate to hand it to you, but I got to hand it to you. That was some stealth stuff.
Didn't see it coming. That's the beauty. When you run the same play, you get multiple options out of it. They think that you've defended it. Now we're going all the way through. That's what we do.
I feel like I just got hit with a hammer screen.
I was gonna go. You were. I was gonna hit you with one during the James Harden one. April 1st, the 76ers might want to hit up Jake from State Farm and get some insurance on Harden. I let you live.
Jeez, that's That's kind of tough. Wow. Way to cap it. I'm kind of upset, but it's fine though. It's fine though. Before we get out of here, quick announcement. For those of you that have enjoyed Steve's game threads all year long, and you should be following Steve on Twitter if you aren't already, by the way. But at any rate, if you've ever wanted to watch a game with us and kind of see what we're seeing and pick out some things, you will now have the opportunity to do so. We will be hosting some live watch parties. Our first one will be on Wednesday night. We got Bulls Celtics. So we will drop the link that you can join in the Dunker Spot community. So if you have not joined the community, please do so. Just go to the community tab on Twitter if you have that update available, because they're still rolling out the feature. Type in the Dunker Spot. It should pop up. Send that request. We'll let you in. And we'll drop that link close to game time so you can hop in and chop it up with us. It'll be a live chat, but also you will actually get to watch along. You'll be seeing the same thing that we see. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Hyped up for it. The hashtag is Big Juice.
Big Juice.
I just haven't said it in a while. All right.
You know what? Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your pods, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we'll catch you Wednesday, and then we'll catch you Thursday.
Cameron Brink has more post moves than Rudy Gobert.